We are, we don't have a name. We're a long-running writers group who fell in love with each other, literally. I mean, you know how best friends fall in love with each other? Girls especially. I know, you know, remember that feeling of like, and you want to be with your best friend all the time? Well, that's how we are. We even go away for weekends. I mean, we really love each other. And I just want to frame this by why did we start our writers group? We were the type of girls when we were young, all five of us, that never belonged to a clique. Nobody wanted us. We were outsiders. We wanted to finally have our own place. Right?
Yeah. That's
it. True.
And now we do.
True.
So we're really glad about that. Raise your hand if you're a writer. Yay! Right. Raise your hand if you were afraid to raise your hand to say you were a writer. Thank you. Okay. Well, most of us on this stage came to writing a little later in life. I published my first, my name is Randy Susan Myers. I live to make people feel good. I published my first novel when I was 57 years old. With Macmillan, I mean, not like in my basement. So, oh, look at this, this is good. My fourth book is coming out, and I'm now with Simon & Schuster. The Widow of Wall Street is coming out in April. So you can do it. You can, you know, spend years and years first having bad boyfriends, making bad decisions, running around doing stupid things like having children, and then later publish a book. I'm here to tell you that. My latest book is Accidents of Marriage, and I am really happy to be here. I want to introduce my favorite people. I'm going to start with Juliette Fay.
My name's Juliette Fay. I have four published novels, three contemporary fiction, one historical fiction. The latest one is The Tumbling Turner Sisters, which is about a family of four acrobats in vaudeville, four sisters who are acrobats. I have had writing groups for the last three novels, and honestly, I have no idea how I wrote that first one without one. So.
I'm Kathy Crowley, and I'm like the bell curve buddy in the group because I still haven't published a novel, but I'm working on it really hard.
She is.
And also, my husband and I are opening a bookstore in March in Belmont, and our first event... Our first event is we are hosting Randy's launch of her of The Widow of Wall Street. That's April 11th. So, that's all.
Yay! Hi, I'm Nicole Bernier. I have one book published. It's called The Unfinished Work of Elizabeth D. Came out with Crown Random House a few years ago. I had never been with a writing group, even through writing the first novel. I started writing it after my third child was born, and I lived in Washington, D.C., and it wasn't until after the first draft was done and a few revisions that I moved up here and met these guys, and then that's when everything kind of took off, because I hadn't had a community at all. I started writing fiction later in life. I'd been a journalist for about 20, 25 years, writing long-form magazine articles and sort of investigative journalism, and now I kind of cheat on both sides of the fence, keep them going at the same time.
They don't know late in life. I'm E.B. Moore, and I was a metal sculptor, now retired, turned poet, turned novelist. I published my first book when I was 72, second book when I was 73. So it's never too late to start. You just keep going and have a great writing group, because that's what really counts.
Mm-hmm. Before I start the first question, I just want to say one of the most fantastic things about having a great writers group is that you always have at least four people in this world who are thrilled for everything that you're doing, and that's just a great thing. So the first question goes to Juliette, who's going to talk about, can you give us an overview of writing groups in general, not just ours, but the how, what, when, how long?
So I wrote up a nice, handy little one-pager that you hopefully all received on your way in. If you didn't get it on your way in, get it on your way out. So I'm assuming that you can all read, since many of you are writers. So I'm gonna let you just read that. And it's sort of like a question of, you know, Do you want this or do you want that? And really, you can build your writing group however you like. It's just some things to sort of think about as you're putting a writing group together. I'm going to just focus on three aspects of building your writing group. And the first one is scope. What is the scope of the writing group you're looking for? So maybe you're on one end of the spectrum and you want a lot of people, and you want them to be, you know, writing in every genre from apocalyptic romance to paranormal sci-fi, and they're meeting weekly, and you're reading multiple people's things, and you're staying up till the wee hours of the night, fueled by cigarettes, gin, and angst. That is perfectly reasonable, unless, of course, you have a family to go home to and a job to wake up for in the morning. And I do want to caution you not to ruin any important relationships or reliable sources of income to hang out with your writing group. Tempting, but don't do it. On the other end of the spectrum, you might be somebody who's just, you just want to have one other person to talk to, you know? Maybe you're not even meeting in person. Maybe you're doing it electronically or by phone. That's completely fine, too. There's all different ranges of writing groups. And I think what's most important is not only to think about who you are as a writer, but who you are as a person. If you're somebody who's very overwhelmed by big groups, that first scenario is not going to be great for you. But if you're somebody who really wants the most possible eyes on your work, maybe you do want a bigger kind of group. I think most writing groups are probably somewhere in the middle of that, but that's just something for you to sort of think about in terms of what's going to work for you. The next thing I'm going to just mention is genre. So some writing groups are, you know, everybody's writing the same thing, the same genre. You know, everybody's writing sci-fi or that kind of thing. I think it can be helpful if there are writers from different genres in your group because you really get a sense of different kinds of writing. It can really broaden your horizons as a writer, and that can be a wonderful thing. The one thing that may not work is if, you know, if you're somebody who just really doesn't like paranormal, and you've got somebody writing paranormal, it may be hard for you to be objective about work that you're just were never going to love. I'll give you one example. I was in the beginnings of a different writing group. We were sort of coming together, the writing group I had before this one, and there were, you know, a bunch of people had been invited, and we'd all met at a Grub Street class, which is a great place to meet a writing group and other writers. And one woman, her writing, her book, the book she was working on, involved graphic descriptions of child sexual abuse. And I know me, and I know that I was not going to be able to manage that. And I knew that if she joined the group, which was perfectly reasonable for her to do, I wasn't going to be able to do it. And she ended up not joining, and so, you know, that worked out. But that was, you know, everybody writes different stuff. You have to sort of think about what's going to work for you in terms of genre. The one last thing I'll mention is distance. You may love this idea of a writing group. You may have found a great group. But if there's someone in the group that has to drive an hour and a half to get to the meeting, they're either not going to come very often, or they're going to come late, or they're going to be irritable when they get there. And that's perfectly human. We had somebody in our writing group that we loved. She was great. But she was driving an hour every time to get to a meeting, and it just eventually didn't work for her. So those are some of the things you might want to focus on when you're thinking about building your writing group.
I never knew we weren't supposed to be irritable. Well, Juliet, what a way to tell me.
Well, you know, we're all a little irritable sometimes.
One thing, you know, to go on with Juliet said is to be careful of the person who needs everything to be written their way. I was once, let me make sure they are not in here, he or she is not in him. I was in a writing group once where no matter what you wrote, they told the person, it's good, but it would be better if you had a ghost in it. So beware the ghost, I always say. The next question, goes to Kathy for 10 points. Kathy, how do we do it?
So I'll see if I can get all 10 points. So we have all been in, I've been in writing groups for years and years, and lots of different varieties. And we came together and decided to sort of make a writing group that suited our needs. And in particular, we were all writing novels, and we wanted a writing group that would read an entire novel at one time, which is not the typical situation for most writing groups. I mean, most of them are sort of meet weekly or even monthly, and there's no way that you can, at least anyone I know, can get a draft ready for a novel every few weeks. So the way our group works is when one of us has something that we feel ready, you know, to share, we sort of send an email out, set a date, and then make sure that the manuscript is sent to everyone at least a few weeks ahead of time. And sometimes we send it as an email document, and people make comments on, you know, through right on the email document, or I mean right on the Word document, and other times we actually use services like Lulu, or you can do this at Staples, to send out a hard copy of the manuscript, and people can write in the margins. Once we have that, all the readers read through, ideally, you know, more than once, the manuscript, make notes, and then make a kind of summary comment after reading it, maybe reading it again, thinking about it, sort of summary comment about what's working and what's not working. Occasionally, one of us will send out a manuscript and say, you know, I'm just interested in just read for plot, or I've changed the voice. Tell me how the voice is working. But in most situations, we're kind of reading to just give impressions, guidance, and try to be, you know, reflective readers on what the writer's trying to do. During the meeting, the person who is being workshopped is in this box, and I don't think Jenna Blum is here, but we all had an experience, well, I think almost all of us had an experience in workshop with the writer Jenna Blum, who would put the writer in the box where you sort of sit quietly and listen to other people talk about your work. And at the end of the discussion, the writer might step out and say, you know, this was helpful, this was interesting. One thing you didn't talk about is, I wanted to know if this character is working, or I changed this part, what do you think about that? And sort of get more particular questions answered. But the bulk of the discussion, the writer is kind of sitting back and listening to a group discuss the work. And the only other time that we occasionally will have somebody step in is say, you know, they're critiquing my book and focusing a lot on the opening when I've already decided the opening doesn't work. So I might sort of step in and say, you know what, let's just move on because this is not time that's being well spent. And then at the end of the session, we hand over either our electronic or our physical document to the writer to bring home and kind of go through our line-by-line comments or our summary comments and go from there.
Thank you. One thing that Kathy forgot to mention, that generally we take notes, the person who's in the box, and what we are actually writing is, you're a dope. Those are stupid comments. I hate you so much. Because no matter how much you love each other, it is normal. We all walk into every group thinking, maybe this time the I will be said, this is perfect.
Right.
There is nothing that needs to be done. Of course, it never happens, so you have to sit there and write these things. I hate you so much, Juliet. Okay? I love you, Juliet.
I love you too, honey.
The next question goes back to Juliet. I really, really love you. And we're going to do something quick here. Juliet, a low point in writing and how a writing group helped.
So I had, this was with another writing group, and I was writing a story about a woman with an 11-year-old daughter with an eating disorder, and I was really struggling with how deep to go with this writing, with this eating disorder. You know, was she going to be just sort of experimenting? Was it going to be deeply embedded? Was she going to be hospitalized? And I was struggling with that, and I brought it to my writing group, and they were all pretty clear that what they thought I should do was that the eating disorder would be so deeply embedded that the girl would die. And they told me, you need to kill Morgan. So I had both a rational and a visceral reaction to that. The rational reaction was, you know, I don't think that's right for the story. This is not the only plot thread. This is, you know, and it will become the only plot thread if I kill Morgan. I need to be able to talk about other things. It will be a story about a dead daughter instead of some of the other things I want to talk about. And so I didn't think that was the right reaction. My visceral reaction was that I wanted to stand up, quit the group, and run for my car. And I did not do that. And so basically what I said to them was, no, I'm not killing Morgan. If you want to kill an 11-year-old in one of your stories, you go right ahead. I'm not doing it this time. And it was really weirdly helpful to me in a number of ways. First, it was really useful to know what I didn't want to do. And then it made it much more clear what I did want to do. And so that clarification was really helpful to me. It also helped me sort of identify myself as a writer a little bit more. This group was pretty dark. They were a dark bunch, if you didn't get that already, you know? And I realized that I want to be the kind of writer that takes you to a dark place and brings you back out again. And I wanted to be my writing to be more redemptive than that, and that was also really helpful. The third way was helpful is that I wrote it the way I wanted to write it, and I brought it back to them, and they said, this really works. And I thought, okay, so then I get to trust myself a little bit. I don't have to always take their opinions as this is what I have to do. I can sort of say, no, it's really just not sounding right for me. I can do it my way.
Redemption. Nicole's going to share a best writing group experience with us.
Okay, so it's a best writing experience, but you have to bear with me to hear why it's a best writing group experience, because it's kind of hidden in there, and I go into through the back door. So what everybody thinks would be a great writing experience is when you walk in, like Randy said, and it's like everyone's read your book, they say, this is perfect, oh my God, you knocked it out of the park, you don't need to change a single comma, like send it off right now. In fact, I think you should write bestseller across the top, because you're so set, everything works. But that doesn't usually happen. And I actually think, okay, so it never happens. So, but in your mind, it's gonna happen every time, you're just about there. But when I actually think that the writing group works best is when the opposite happens. And bear with me on this. So each one of us has had a novel that we've put in the drawer for whatever reason. And maybe it will end up being revived and maybe it isn't. But when we're meeting to workshop this novel, we're doing a lot of talk about character and plot and stakes and the temperature, the emotional temperature of the story. And there's a lot of suggestions about why it's working, why it's not working. And the writer gets to a moment of time, and you can see her kind of, in our cases, her, kind of like absorbing it all and getting stormy and doing all the I hate you writing down on the paper. But you can also see the wheels turning. And when you're forced to look objectively at all the work it's going to take to get this where it's going to go, and whether or not you think it's really worth it, or if this book was kind of written at a point in time where you really aren't anymore, or you don't want to be, and then you come to the decision that it's time to put it in the drawer, to be part of that experience with a writer who is deciding on the spot to take this really big thing, I mean, this is a fully formed novel at this point, and put it away because it's not working. I mean, that's kind of like a beautiful, ugly thing, and you're kind of honored to be a part of it, I think. So that's best.
Not only is that great, but I think the takeaway is that you can all go to Staples and have like little rubber stamps made up that say bestseller, and when you send to agents, it's a great idea. Stamp it right on the top. Yeah, thank you, Nicole. That's a beautiful thing. That was actually great. Next, we have Kathy with a worst group experience.
Yes, I have two quick things to say, which actually fits in neatly with Nicole's description. I was once in a writing workshop where everybody was lovely and they were good writers, but the dynamic of the group was such that nobody felt comfortable giving negative feedback at all, anything that might have been perceived as negative in the least. And so it ended up, you know, people were tiptoeing around things that didn't work and putting too much emphasis, I think, on the things that were working. So when I left the group, I felt, you know, like I was missing these people who I really liked and were very supportive, but I wasn't getting any good feedback. And I think one of the strengths of our group is we're very good at kind of balancing that negative and positive feedback. I also wanted to give a quick example of something that happened in a workshop, which I call mighty dogging. And that story is that I was in a workshop, which was a very good workshop. One woman brought this story that was great. It was really great. It had a few flaws, and the story was called Mighty Dog. And I take responsibility as a member of that group that we basically killed this poor story by giving her so much, maybe if you did this, and maybe if you did that, and she kept bringing it back, and slowly the life got kind of sucked out of the story. And so that is kind of my other worst case, which is, you know, as the writer and also as a member of the group, to kind of know when to just step back and say, okay, take this home and don't listen to us anymore. Listen to yourself and save your story. Save the life in your story.
And that's become a shorthand for us,
right,
too. Like, don't mighty dog it. So if you do something too much by committee and you get obsessed with what everybody's telling you to do, you could mighty dog the story.
No Frankensteins, please. No Frankenstein novels. Nicole, you're going to give us another worst, right?
I did best before.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's right. Kathy gave a worst. I'm going to do another worst. Okay.
Right.
So my worst was when I wrote the first draft of my novel, I didn't live around here, and I was part of a longstanding workshop in Washington, D.C. And with the week that my novel was being workshopped, and it is about two families in the year after the September 11th attacks, learning things about people they didn't realize who are now gone. And so when it came time to workshop my book, one woman in the group said, I guess I just don't understand what the big deal is and why, you know, the problems are so serious in the book and what it is that's worth getting upset about. I mean, this isn't like homelessness and starvation. These seem like very first world problems to me. And she can own that. I mean, she can feel the way she wants to feel, but that was what the book is about. And so it kind of gave me a very good realization early on in my fiction, my entree to fiction, which is when you're in a writing group, it's very important to take a book on its own terms and on the writer's own terms. You can question whether or not the character works and the motivation and the stakes seem high enough and if the actions seem genuine for what the character is, but it's not really fair play to question whether or not the subject matter is worth writing about. And your job is to help them make the best book that they can within what they're trying to do. So one of the other novels in this group actually was an intergalactic thriller, ecological disaster thriller kind of a thing. And it read sort of like Scooby-Doo Goes to the Moon. And you know what I mean? We all sat there and we realized that our job there was not to question whether the world needs a book about Scooby-Doo going to the moon, but to make this the very best Scooby Moon book that it could be. And it just made a very good impression. That was a good learning experience early on in for me.
The thing about writing groups is that they are half writing groups professional, a quarter food, cookie, stuff like that. And then there's another part where it's a very personal thing, because as much as everybody says, oh, this book isn't about me, yeah, of course. I mean, writers to say that are lying. Of course, everybody brings their self. And you run into problems. I was in an open writing group, which is a tough one, and a woman brought something in, and we were critiquing it, and she burst into tears so hard that, and she kept saying, but this really happened to me. It was about a sexual abuse of a four-year-old. And when something like that happens, somebody in that group has to be willing to take off every writer hat they have and become the group social worker. Yeah, that was me. So tough things can happen in writer's group, and you have to be prepared for that, which is why we are where we are, because we just social work each other to death. So now Liz is going to sort of go into a double question. She's going to talk about how honest you get, how gentle, sort of going off, how deep the critique. How do you decide on new members? All the above.
All right. Well, I think the thing that has already been said is that you've got to tell the hard truth. You can't just soft pedal it. But that doesn't give you the right to drown somebody in negative comments, which is all too easy to do because you think we're here to fix this. So therefore, we're not going to worry about what's great. We're just going to worry about what's awful. And people get buried when you do that. Now, the first time I went into a fiction class, I had just retired from being a metal sculptor, and I wore steel-toed boots, and I was not taking into consideration that people have tender toes when they're writers. And I'm afraid I ended up stomping somebody rather badly. And the assignment in this class had been read this story and write the plot line and then comment on the character. And so I read it, and the plot line I thought was great, but I wasn't told to write what I thought about the plot line, just what the plot line was, how it came across. And it was about a gay woman who wanted to have a baby, and so she was trying to persuade her friend to be a sperm donor. And I actually thought it was had a great hook. And but her character came across as being remarkably manipulative. and as if she didn't really care about her friend, that she was so focused on what she was doing. And there was a little piece of me, a little piece of my gut that said, ooh, should you really say that? And then I thought, well, you're supposed to, this is the assignment. And so I went ahead and said it. Now, God knows how toxic I was when I said it. I don't know, because it was about 15 years ago, and I still feel awful about it. But I said just that it was, she came across as manipulative. And after that, I got a very cool breeze off of this woman. And bit by bit, very cool breeze off of all of her friends. And by the end of the course, I found out, and this was a fiction class, mind you, as Randy says, you just can't believe it's necessarily that it's fiction, because it turned out that this, of course, was really much more memoir. This was the woman's story. And I had cut her to the quick. I hadn't meant that she was manipulative. I meant that that's how it came across. But I didn't know enough at that point to make the comments a little bit less toxic than they must have sounded to her, because I wasn't questioning what her choices were. It was just the words that she was using. And this happens. If you have one reader, it's very hard not to get sort of sucked into this and be upset by what's being said. So it's great when you have a group like this, because then it gets argued back and forth. Well, no, well, this is what makes it sound that way. And sometimes, you know, it could have been just me, and nobody else felt that way. So I really rely on these people to, you know, to keep me on track. Now, one of the things that that happens is that you have to listen. If you're the one being critiqued, for me, I have a tendency to think, well, no, that's not what I want. But then when I go home and I start thinking about what was said, and I try to imagine how it would be if I did what people were suggesting, and I find that was very helpful in the end, because I could either go in the direction that they're talking about, you know, kill Morgan, or just do it the way I want to. But if I tried something, then I would know why it wasn't working for me. And so that when it comes time for having an editor look at stuff, you're ready for the hard questions, because they're not going to hold your hand and tell you sweetly that they don't care for whatever it might be. They're just going to run down the list of no, 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 change this, change that, change that. And if you have already gone through some of this stuff and you're ready for this, and you say, well, no, this actually doesn't work for me, and this is why, and it makes the publishing process a whole lot more pleasant. Now then we get on to the notion of new people in a writing group. And that can be very difficult, because when you have a writing group that really works, you don't want to mess it up. But sometimes writing groups will go down to too few people, and so it's necessary to bring in someone. It's a little bit like online dating. You know, you try to get the profile and see what this person is like. You know, maybe you have an email interchange so that you're finding out, having a sample of the writing, you know what they're doing. And, they seem good. You know, they seem like they're probably kind, and the writing is good and will fit in with what you're doing. So you say, sure, come ahead, Dr. Jekyll. And, and then there's Mr. Hyde the next day. Now, it's not always that dire. Sometimes it's just something as silly as being late. Now, in one group that I was in, we met and started instantly at 11. One of the reasons for this was because every time somebody came into this apartment, the dog that lived there would go berserk. And so we wanted everybody there ahead of time. And then we would read a piece and critique it. And it was about 10 to 15 pages. And this woman would come in about three-quarters of the way through the reading, and the dog would just go nuts, barking his head off. So that was a problem that interrupted everything. Then she had to get some tea, because everybody else had tea, she had to have tea. But no, she didn't want sugar, she wanted honey in it. And this just, and then she's shuffling the papers. Where are we on this? And by that time, when it was my turn, I was really pissed, because all concentration was gone, mine plus everybody else's. But even when she wasn't there, even before she arrived, I couldn't concentrate because when was it going to start? When was the hoo-ha? So one of the great things is that these groups sometimes have a way of self-regulating, and these people winnow themselves out if you're lucky. If you're not, you have to sort of encourage them to winnow themselves out. And so that's, it's a great thing. You end up with a group that that works well together and can last for a long time. And if you want to start a group or be with a group, I think it's already been mentioned, Grub Street is a phenomenal place to go because they have a great community of writers who really care about each other and work to support each other, not just when you're in class with them, but year after year after year, whether you're still going to classes there or not.
You know, I really kind of resent you told that story about me. I do like honey. I'm allergic to sugar. That's it. So I'm just going to, before we go into our round robin, and then we have a game for you guys, a quick game. First of all, we have never accepted a new number. We have, at various times, each brought up, maybe somebody can come in, and then we realize, so if you're the person who's, we once did a thing like this, a few of us, and the first question somebody asked was, can I join your group? So I just want to put it out there. We're horrible. Some of the things that I've learned, and you can see all of us had first husbands, or as we like to call them, first groups. You have to know the tendencies, even in a great group like ours. We all know which of us tends to be the very dark one, that, you know, the Morgan killer. We know which one tends to be, I want more inside, more interior. And it's really great to know how to balance. But one thing we have learned is you don't have to take any one particular idea as being the be-all and the end-all, but when all four people say something along the same thing, it doesn't mean you have to do what they say. It means that's not working. I mean, you just can't deny four smart people as much as you want to write down they're so stupid. The other ways in which we really help each other is as a huge support network. For instance, before we have a launch, getting up and reading a piece is really scary. We will all practice in front of each other when we're going to launch a book. We come to each other's launches and do everything but stand next to the person to take away the one who's chatting the whole time. Or I was at Nicole's book launch, and I looked around and I went over to her husband because I didn't want to upset her. It was a beautiful party. And I said, Tom, there are no books here. Now, the thing you really want to do at your book launch party is sell books. Yeah. I mean, that's really, I mean, you want to see your friends and your family, but you really want to sell books. And so Tom and I, between us, we were calling there, you know, where's this supposed to be? I'm not going to mention the bookstore that was supposed to bring the books. But they screwed up. And it's really good to have partners and husbands. Because my husband then went out, drove from downtown Boston out to Wellesley Books, who was not the one who made the mistake, loaded up cartons of books, and brought them back. This is why you need a support, a great thing. You need guerrilla warfare. So I know that many people here, whenever we go into a bookstore and we see one of the other's books, it's like a miracle. By the time we walk out, it's turned around, face out. I don't know how that happens. I think we have some kind of power that's just amazing. Covers. You'll be shocked to know that we don't love every cover we get. And so we'll bring the new cover. And there are times where, and we're honest. It's not the kind of thing where you say, oh, yeah, that's beautiful, as you're secretly, like, gagging at the side. We'll say, we support you in fighting for a different cover. And we will send covers. How many times do we send covers? Back and forth. There was Liz had a cover she didn't like that none of us liked. And one of us put it into Google Image and found it on a bunch of romance books. And she was able to bring that. So there are many ways a good group will work for each other. Now what we're going to have before the raffle, I know we have a raffle. We have a round robin of do's and don'ts. So I'm going to start with my first don't. I believe this. You don't have to listen to me. do what you want to do, as my mother used to say. It's your funeral. Don't drink. Alcohol writing groups are a terrible mix.
Do wait 24 hours before you look at all the notes and your own notes and the notes they've given you. I really do think that we sit there and go, no, 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 no. And then you go home the next day and you wait 24 hours and you look at them and you go, oh, yeah, yeah. So I find that 24 hours really makes me more open to the possibilities.
My suggestion is don't bring something to be workshopped before you feel ready. If it's too early or, you know, it's too nascent a thing, it's the feedback you're going to get is going to be not helpful and confusing.
My don't would be when you are critiquing someone else's book, don't start with the negative. We have a pretty good flow that we've worked out. I don't know if it was consciously or unconsciously, but we always start with things that we really liked about the book and just kind of going around and get a mood about how moved we were by the book and the characters and all this, and then gradually the constructive compliments and the criticism come up. But don't go right there. It's not nice.
Do drink heavily after.
That's what chocolate is for.
That too.
Okay, we have a few seconds before we do the raffle. Any other do's or don'ts that you can think of, a wisdom that you wish you had said during this panel, ladies?
I didn't give a do. The do that I was going to give came from an idea from what you said. If you are going to say someone like something like, that character just comes off as manipulative, one thing that's really useful to back that up is to actually have gone through the manuscript and marked sections in the text that give that are an example of that place that gave you that opinion. Because it can be as simple as a place where the person gives a smug smile. And that word smug or some other synonym for it can just cement in your mind that this person is a manipulative or negative character. So anytime you can point to the author about where you got this impression, it's very helpful.
I have one more do, and that is do share intel and gossip about the publishing industry. did you hear? The publishing industry, I find the publishing industry to be like Alice in Wonderland. You just never know what you're going to, it's like a whole other country, and it's really useful to be able to come to these guys and say, I'm hearing this, are you hearing that, or how should I handle this, you know, contract thing, or this situation with my editor, I'm not sure how hard to push, and so that sort of ability to sort of go to other people and say, am I crazy, or is this the white rabbit, you know?
Well, anything else? So the only things I'll add on is occasionally go out to meals or do something that's fun, which for us is eating. are there other fun things that people do? I don't know, whatever. Because it's really hard because you become really dear friends and you can't eat into the writing group some. So we go out to dinner every now and then. And the other thing that we do in various configurations is go away for quick and longer writing weekends or weeks, which is a fantastic thing. We'll often go to an inn where we each have our own room, and we've often gone to Algonquin. And so we meet for dinner. We don't see each other before or after unless we run into each other. So we work. And then we have the reward of knowing we're with each other. And no matter what our husbands believe, we really do work, okay? and I guess being with people that you trust enough to be honest with, because you do have to be honest if your goal is to build somebody's book up really well. And the other one thing about honesty, nobody tells the truth in publishing. Nobody says how many books they have printed. Nobody says what their royalties, their...
Royalty statements?
No.
Sales
advance?
Advance. It's like the thing that you eat with that has a, you know, a hollow thing, spoon. Nobody says what their advance is. Nobody talks about the truth. You need a place where you can tell the truth, because otherwise everybody thinks that, oh, I had 200,000 copies printed and I've sold 5 times that amount. It's really good to have a place where you can both be happy for each other and sad for each other. So before we get to questions, we do have a prize. And we were trying to figure out the way to be fairest to do this. And we realized, this is writing. Nothing is fair in this world about writing. So welcome to writing. So we have a question. And the first one to shoot up their hands with the answers will be the winner. And I don't want to be that person. So I'm going to choose Liz, because you're the tallest. And that way you can see
the
like
a tower.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so the question is, it's a two-part question. Who was the first woman to win a Pulitzer Prize for fiction, and what was that book?
Oops.
Yo, what are you asking for hints? No. Oh, she was a nice woman.
Wait a minute. We've got the answer here. An answer here.
What? Wrong.
But a very fine guess.
A very fine guess.
Should have been.
Because we're supportive. Supportive. Made the truth tell.
That was a really good guess, Priscilla. You're welcome. You're so smart.
Yes.
You got it! Yay! And for your wisdom, you are going to win the first ever given gift certificate to Belmont Books Bookstore.
So, if we don't open, I will buy you some coffee or something. This is our first gift certificate, so I'll give it to you.
Now we have one more, right, Kath?
What?
Don't we have one more gift certificate?
No.
No. Nope. That was it.
Sorry. There's a little miscommunication there. I only brought one.
Congratulations. That was excellent. And your guess was so superb. Okay, I think we are exactly at 2:40. Time for questions. Did I do it right? Oh, yeah. Okay, questions. And we have a mic. Great question. For those who, if anyone can hear, competition and jealousy among us. How do we handle that if it ever shows its green face?
For me, in any event, I'm so excited about everything that happens to each one of these people. I feel as if it's a great joy. It reflects on me. It reflects on them. It reflects on our group. And so I'm hoping that they feel the same way about me when something good happens. I trust that they do. So it's a wonderful feeling to have that kind of backup where you don't have to worry that somebody is going to bite you.
I think that's also true because when you're involved in helping to shape a book, like it really feels, in a teeny, teeny way, like a group victory. It's like, yay, we did it. Look what we created.
Sort of. Mm-hmm.
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's a really good question in general with writing because I feel like that's a real phenomenon.
Criticize everything else, but never write anything themselves.
I'm sorry. Could you say that once more? Hold the mic a little bit further away.
Okay, I'm a member of three different writers' groups. And normally the killer situation is where certain members of the group criticize everything else, but never write anything themselves. How do you deal with that sort of issue?
You mean it's a writer's group where some people just never hand anything in?
Exactly, yes.
Throw a bottle at them. That always works. Anybody else want to take that? I think that in that case, you have to do something like rethink group rules. And every now and then, in any group situation, except for ours, because we just love each other so much, you have to do something where you revisit. And this is true. I've run groups for many years, including groups for criminals. So you do a step back and you say, I just want to visit what we have here in terms of how we do our agendas, how we take turns handing in, who writes and who reads, and then let it open up. And if everybody except you agrees that, no, we love being trashed by somebody who never writes, then it might be that you're not in the right fit. But the first thing I would do is open up a new rules category. Yeah, we did have we're going to just finish answering the question about jealousy. Kathy, I believe you were...
Well, I was just saying, I think it's a really great question for writers in general, and it comes up, and I mean, I am the person who hasn't published a book in this group, but I have to say I felt so supported through my book in the drawer and my very slowly evolving novel that I don't have that feeling with this group, but I think it's a real...
phenomenon among writers and something that probably isn't discussed enough.
I have to agree with that. I think it's human nature, especially in an industry where sometimes it feels kind of random who gets a good deal and who doesn't, and you know, that kind of thing. I think it's just normal to feel envious of somebody, you know, getting something you wish you had. I think we're able to sort of override that because we really care about each other, and we do have that sense of like, yay, we did it, you know, that kind of thing. And I would urge you, if you were to get into a writing group where you felt like the envy is taking over that sense of pride, that sounds like not so healthy. You know, it's just part of being a grown-up that you don't, you know, you sort of have inside thoughts and outside thoughts, as I say to my kids, you know. And being your better self and saying, yeah, it's not normal to be envious, but let's not let that be something that creates, you know, a toxic situation in the group.
And great along answer. Those lines, actually, if it's a person who's not in your immediate writing group, but it's, like Kathy was saying, just it's in the milieu, you've just got this feeling like, oh, they're all getting, you know, and you start getting angsty about it. One of the best ways I found to, like, just turn off that faucet of non-productive feelings is actually social media, which is where a lot of it comes in through. If you're seeing everything on Twitter and Facebook and all these just extraordinarily good things that seem to be happening to everybody else, you can always, that's a wonderful thing, you can kind of go off social media. You can mute what you're seeing from who. And you don't need, it's sort of like seeing over, you know, April vacation, all the people who are going to these incredibly islands and you're not. You can just put them in a category where you're not seeing their posts all the time because you don't need to see that everybody's going to the islands and you're shoveling snow.
I see five women up here. And was that intentional when you started? And even if it's not, do you think it actually, for whatever reason, works better?
Oh, interesting question. Mm-hmm. I was in a writing group, and it was four of us, and one of them was a guy, and I thought he was really useful. Useful. That's not the word. Let me edit that comment, please. I thought it was really interesting to have his perspective as a guy. So I think it can be, and it's more. I think it's less about gender and more about sort of the vibe of the group and whether, you know, a certain person fits in. But I think that if we were to invite somebody to be part of our group, we wouldn't be against having a man.
Speak
That's my
for yourself,
anyway.
Juliet.
Okay.
I've been in groups with that have men in them, and it's worked out fine. Right now, this group obviously does not, and I'm in another group that does small pieces as opposed to ours, which does the larger. And it's also all women and works very well. So I think it's whatever the group dynamic happens to be. I don't think it has anything to do with what the gender is.
I'll be the outlier. I very much like having it be all female because when I've been in groups that have been mixed, there tends to come up a atmosphere where I, in a small way and sometimes a big way, the women start taking care of the men more. I think women tend to be natural caretakers of men, and I have seen that happen. There's just a little bit of mothering that goes on, and that might just be me, but that's something that I... But did we set out to do an all-women's group?
No.
No, we just were choosing among ourselves, and we happened to be all women. We were in a group together called Beyond the Margins, and I think we kind of reached... We had a group with everybody for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Who has the mic? Up.
I had a question for groups starting out that are at maybe a different stage than all of you. In my group, I find out that, you know, we have different backgrounds, and some people are trying to do blogs, some are doing fiction. And how do we get on the same page so that we can respond to each other's genres?
Do you have rules?
We're working on them. We're fairly new, and we're actively working on them.
This is a lot of probably on your page. Do you want to take this? Or?
Yeah, I think it really depends on sort of what you want to do. So something that we'll do, like we really focus on sort of full-length manuscripts, but occasionally one of us will write a piece and we'll just throw it out to the group and say, hey, give me your feedback on this. It's a three-pager or whatever. And that's fine for us. I think that what really, it's really sort of a question for your group and what you're willing, how far afield from your own writing you're willing to go? I mean, I can imagine that, you know, I generally am writing novels, but I've read other pieces that these guys have written that have been really helpful for me. So like smaller pieces. So I think it depends on sort of how you want to structure it. If you feel like it's not working, I would just urge you to say, why isn't this working? And sort of get to the root of, you know, what's bugging me or other people about this.
Were you asking about genre, too?
Like, to give you a specific example, so the people that have worked on blogs, they're working really hard to cut things down and get them succinct and right to the point. Others who are working on a novel, we're trying to be expansive and,
right.
You know, so you can kind of be approaching things from a different set of internal rules.
Yeah. So one of the things you might want to do is sort of make that explicit and say, hey, I know you're a blog writer and, you know, we all know, you know, word count is everything with blogs. But what I need you to do right now is not sort of think in that brain. I need you to think in a different brain of, you know, what do you like to read? I mean, I'm assuming these people read novels. So to maybe make it explicit and say, okay, I need you to not think about word count. I need you to just really think about whether this is a story that hangs together or vice versa, you know? You know, the novel writer who says to the blog writer, you need to expand this whole part over here about blah, blah, blah. That's not, you know, okay, I couldn't do that with the space I had. So maybe just bringing that out, I think, could help.
One of the things that we do that I think could help you is we always, when we hand in our stuff, we'll write up a page. This is what we're looking for with this draft. So we'll specifically say, please look at da, 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 da. And then we do a synopsis before so people, to anchor people. And I think that that's what you should be doing in your group.
Hello. How long have you been together and has it always been you five?
We argue about when we first got together, which is kind of weird. Really, it's kind of strange. We met at least 8 years ago, some of us further. We've been meeting for like 6 years, I believe.
I think, yeah.
Just the five of us.
Yeah.
Thanks. To expand on that question a little bit earlier, and thank you for coming today. I love the vibe that you all just give off.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's nice.
What kind of structure do you guys usually go through in your meetings? And what kind of rules do you guys typically have?
As I outlined a little bit earlier, we kind of send the work several weeks ahead of time, and we have, and maybe with a letter like Randy described, we're saying, you know, I'm writing a revision of this. I'm especially interested in your thoughts on X, Y, and Z. Or it might be without any further explanation. And then when we meet, I think as far as rules, as I said, sometimes we'll have the writer kind of sit there quietly and just listen at the beginning, and then toward the end have more of a conversation about what's happening. Does that answer your question?
And we do one work in one meeting. We're only discussing one piece of work. So it's a lengthy piece of work. So it's not, like some groups might have everybody write, you know, a chapter, and then they all share and go around. Ours, we put the spotlight on one thing, we focus on it, we send it out in advance, and that's dedicated to that meeting.
I think that's what's made us the strongest in some ways for me, is that each night is dedicated to just one person. So you're not sitting there waiting to hear what people can say about you. You know you're only going to be talking about Nicole that night, and that really, really helps us. Plus, whoever is talking, who is on deck that night, they generally bring food.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say that.
Yeah, so that's really
nice.
You want
to bring really good food so that they'll like you and only say nice things.
Like, Liz makes homemade biscotti.
Oh, my
gosh. Just saying.
Don't steal her from our group. She's ours.
Yeah. So because you've had this group that's been going for so long, I have come from a group that I'm kind of deciding I kind of need to wean myself away from. It was a workshop, so it started off as sort of a class, but it's kind of evolved into a kind of quasi-class, quasi-workshop. And I found after a while that the group, which is now only, you know, three writers and an instructor, was becoming so insular. And I wonder how you avoid that insularity. I mean, you've got five people, maybe it's adverse. I'm just curious.
I think having five people helps a lot. I think when you get too small, it is apt to get difficult, and so I would encourage you to expand despite the Mr. Hyde effect.
I think another big thing that helps us is that we don't have a regular meeting time. We meet as needed. So I will, for instance, send out a thing going, okay, I think I have a almost first draft. How long do you guys need to read, 400 pages? And then we set a date. So that, I think, is a really unusual thing that we do, is that so nobody is writing to the group. And sometimes one of us might go three times in a row, and they're not 3 years. We're very fluid for the needs of the group.
I also think that we really don't always agree. And it's always interesting to hear, somebody really doesn't like this aspect, and then somebody else will say, well, gee, I thought that was great. So we're not afraid to disagree with each other. And I think that definitely helps.
Hugely important.
But approximately how often?
Every couple of months, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
sometimes it's like once a month, and sometimes it's like not for 3 months. Depends on who's got stuff.
But we're always writing gossip to each other.
Yeah.
So it really holds us together.
And we could probably meet more often than that, but I think we all have a sense, especially when you're reading a full-length novel, if you read someone's work too much, you start to forget what is in this draft that you're looking at because you're getting it mixed up with all the earlier incarnations you've seen of that book. And it really, you are a stronger contributor of critiques when you have only one or two versions of the book fresh in your mind, or three.
That's why I work out so well in this group, is because I'm old enough that I forget the first.
We're all getting close.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hello.
Thank you. I teach personal essay writing at Emerson. I have to always keep the kids focused on the writing. Yeah. Otherwise, we devolve into a conversation about what an ass the ex-boyfriend was or that kind of thing. So I'm wondering if you've faced any situations where you're doing fiction based on real life and you have to kind of avoid commenting on each other's lives.
Oh, can I take that?
Yes.
Uh-oh.
No, I think that one of our real strengths is that we never do that. But we keep it totally irrelevant. And that's a huge overall question. That was our last question, I think, right? When I go to readings, people will always ask, was that you? Is that character you? And some authors will say, no, 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 there's nothing there about me. No. It's a lie, lie, lie. And what I say is, I've stolen the words of Carolyn Parkhorst Rosser, and I say, when you make a cake, you put butter in, because it really makes the cake taste delicious. And you take a bite of it, and the cake tastes delicious, but you're not chewing into a big bite of butter. Big bite of butter. That sounds good, right? So that's what we are. We're the butter and the cookies, or cake. And that's how we feel about each other. We know that our personal lives infuse everything, but it doesn't matter how. And I don't think we've ever broken that covenant.
No, but what I'd like to add to that, because that was always my forte, was doing personal essay writing. That was something that I used to do a lot of, and I do a lot of magazine writing still. And we often will share essays along with each other, particularly when you're in the shoot towards publication. Your editors and your agents are always asking you and your publicist to like write all these essays, and they're always personal.
They want to know. Oh my goodness!
So you're putting it out.
Who
there.
Was and your so first we, one, and how yeah. was it for you?
So we're sharing those essays with each other, and you know that that's what this is. You know what the magazines expect and what the readers want to absorb, but it's a specific kind of a thing that we're sharing with each other.
It's probably also easier for us because we're not 20, right? I mean, your students are.
Yeah.
In college, and so it's...
We're hopefully a little more mature than that.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
And beyond the...
So this was really wonderful. We thought it would be just my husband, and instead... Oh, and Priscilla and Liz's partner, and instead, there's a whole bunch of you. We will be signing books downstairs, and I'm going to say that the reason we do this is, A, to help people as much as possible. We are the Mother Teresa's of the writing world. We also like to have our books bought, so we hope to see some of you downstairs.
Thank you.
Thank you.